consider private ownership of guns was not possible there, one can only imagine what the people of this nation would be capable of. I was relieved by Dalton and Danny around 2 in the morning. I needed a little sleep before taking on the task of moving the generator, among other things, but it was a restless sleep. I kept waking up with images of Russian or Chinese troops kicking in the door of my house and dragging my family out of the house. Not like they would. I'm sure they'd have bigger issues to deal with. We're no more than a blip in the big picture. However, the thoughts were there, and I found myself several times watching Mel sleep. Sometime around 5 a.m., I decided it wasn't worth it anymore. I got dressed and went out to the kitchen for some tea. I had work to do today, and I may as well get ready for it. After pouring a cup of tea, I nosed around in the cupboards. I was curious how much more sugar we had. I found the container Mel kept it in. It was full. So I went looking for the bucket. I found it in one of the lower cabinets and pulled it out. I could tell, just from the weight of it, it was too light. Pulling the top off proved my fear. It was less than half full. Oh, the thought of not having tea once again. But it wasn't like I could run to the store and buy a bag. Oh well, it is what it is. I went outside and tripped over the dogs lying on the porch. It never ceased to amaze me that they found it necessary to lie right in front of the door. There's a whole porch there, but inevitably, one of them would be right in front of the door. Meathead looked up at me when the door hit his belly. He didn't move, though. Instead, he simply dropped his head back onto the deck, so I used the door to scoot him out of the way. At my neighbor's house was the trailer I planned on using for the generator. I went out and started the old Suburban. As it belched smoke, I gave it a minute to wake up. The pause also gave me a minute to think about my old neighbors and what happened to them. I know they went to the camp, but I didn't see them there. It was odd that after the camp was abandoned, no one came back. What happened to them? Where else would they have gone? I pulled out onto the road and drove towards my old house near the end of the road. As I passed the bunker, I stopped for a minute and talked with Dalton and Danny, telling them what I was doing. After a bit of small talk, I continued down the road. It was kind of odd to be driving around in the dark. I couldn't remember the last time I'd done it. As I came to the house, I pulled through the open gate and drove towards the garage that sat off to the side. Turning the truck around, I backed up to the trailer and got out. The trailer had sat for a long time, so I inspected the tires carefully. They were in very good shape, probably fairly new. Continuing the inspection, I heard a thud and looked up. The sound came from the house. I squatted down behind the trailer and waited. I heard a shuffling sound and the floor creak, but nothing more. Someone was in there. I went to the truck and got my carbine and slowly moved towards the back of the house. Another thud, louder this time, confirmed someone was in the house. I picked up my pace and made it to the back door and found it standing open. Now I wished I had my NVG with me. Unfortunately, I didn't, and would have to rely on the light of the carbine. I always hated the thought of trying to clear a house, especially at night with a light. It always seemed to me that turning one of these things on was turning on a shoot-here light. Standing off to the side of the open door, my pulse began to pick up. I could hear it in my ears. I cautiously stepped up onto the concrete steps. Each subsequent step took considerable effort. I was scared to death. But eventually, I was in the threshold of the door, staring into the inky blackness of the house's interior. I had the carbine up to my shoulder and waited, listening. Hearing a bump to the right, I turned and started to walk through the kitchen. There was a stinks to high heaven, water your eyes stink. I couldn't quite place it. As I took one slow step after another, my foot met some resistance. I placed weight on my right foot and stepped into something soft that felt as though it was mashing out either side under my step. I looked down but couldn't see anything, but whatever it was substantial. With my head still looking down, there was a sudden noise in front of me. Instinctively, I hit the switch for the light on my rifle. The intense LED light filled the kitchen and stunned my eyes. but the presence of a huge black bear a mere couple of feet from me in the confines of the kitchen shocked me. "Shit!" I shouted, and tried to backpedal to get some space between me and the Bruin. But my right foot slipped on whatever I was standing in, and I fell back, landing hard on my ass. For his part, the bear let out a loud growl, groan, or some kind of unholy sound. How my bowels didn't let go, I have no idea. But as soon as my ass landed on the floor, I started shooting while trying to scramble away from the beast. The blast and concussion from the weapon was deafening. Being on the floor between the cabinets and the kitchen, there was no place for the muzzle blast to go, except through my head, it seemed. I kept firing as I tried to gain some purchase on the floor. But it was as if I only had one foot to work with, because the right one simply found no traction. To my great fortune, it must have been the first or second round that killed the bear. That didn't stop me from shooting, however, as I continued to fire round after round. Once my senses returned to me, I stopped shooting. Smoke lingered in the beam of my light, and the smell of burnt powder hung heavy, mixing with the existing stench. As I was getting to my feet, there was a crash behind me. I spun to see Dalton coming through the door. His face was wild and he was breathing hard. His AK was at his shoulder, and he was scanning the house. "What the hell is going on?" he shouted, giving him a little wave. "It's okay." Weapon still shouldered, he asked, "What are you shooting at?" I turned sideways and pointed to the opposite end of the kitchen. That. There was more noise outside, and Mike burst through the door with Doc right behind him. "What the hell is going on in here?" Doc asked, looking around. Dalton laughed. "Oh, Moore got himself a bear." "No shit, a bear?" Mike asked, and leaned in to see. Doc looked at me. "You all right?" I looked myself up and down. "Yeah, I guess so." He pointed to my leg. "What's on your leg? Is that blood?" I pointed the light at the floor and looked at my leg. Dalton stepped in and inspected it. Running his finger across my pants, he brought it up to his nose. "Nope, that'd be bear shit." Then he wiped it back on my pants. "Oh, thanks," I said. The floor was covered in bear scat. That soft pile I stepped in was now spread all over the kitchen floor, and me. Mike pinched his nose. "Damn, you stink!" "What the hell are you doing over here?" Doc asked. I told them I was getting the trailer to put the generator on when I heard a bump inside. I thought it was a person and went to investigate. "And found a bear," Doc said. I nodded. "Hey, Morg, next time just step over the pile of bear poop. Don't roll around in it," Mike said. Dalton laughed. "Gotta say, I ain't never seen it done like that before." "You guys can kiss my ass," I said. "Let's drag this thing out of here," Dalton said. We got to work and pulled the beast out the back door. Sarge was there with Ted and Thad when we got it out to the concrete slab behind the house. "Hot damn, boys," Sarge shouted. "That's one fine-looking bear." "I'm surprised there's any left," Doc said. "I figured they'd be hunted out by now." Sarge nodded. "Me too. But we got us one now." He looked at me and said, "Nice work." Then wrinkled his nose and looked me over. "Why are you covered in bear shit?" "He was rolling around in it in there," Mike said. I gave him the finger and he smiled. Looking at Sarge, I said, "I'll see your gator and raise you one bear." Sarge smiled. "Hell of a job, son. Let's get this thing out of here. We got some butchering to do." Thad was standing off to the side, not saying much. I stepped over to him. "What do you think?" His arms were crossed over his chest as he inspected the bear. After a moment, he said, "I think you white people is crazy for messing with these wild animals." I started to laugh. "That's pretty good, Thad," he smiled. "But now that it's dead, I'll deal with it." I went with Mike and got the trailer connected to the truck and backed it over closer to the bear. We picked it up and loaded it onto the trailer and headed towards Danny's house. Mike and Ted went to relieve Danny so he could come to the house and help with the butchering. Thad and Dalton rode with me. Looking at Thad, I said, You know you have to go with me this morning. Yeah, I know. I'd like to work on that bear, but we got work to do. Don't fret, lads. I'll skin the beast, Dalton shouted from the back seat. Thad looked over his shoulder. Take good care of that hide. But of course, I'll make me a furry kilt of it. I started to laugh. Now there's an image I don't need in my mind. Laughing, Thad added, I know, right? After unloading the bear at Danny's, we left him in Dalton. Thad went to get the tractor while I got the truck back out onto the road. Sarge took forever, but finally came out of the house, carrying a plastic shopping bag. What the hell were you doing? I asked, as he climbed in beside me. He held the bag up. Getting Mario some lizard meat. With a smirk, I replied. You were just making time with Miss K. Just shut up and drive. Smiling, I pulled off. I made a quick pit stop at the house to change my pants. I stunk to high heaven and wasn't about to spend all day covered in bear shit. We met up with Thad on the road and headed out towards town. As we passed the road to the house Ian shared with Perez and Jamie, I saw Perez slumped against a fence post. Rolling up, I asked, Well, look who's still alive. Perez took a drag on a cigarette and started to hack and cough while giving me the finger. Once he finally got it under control, he looked up with watering eyes and asked, You headed to town? Yeah, we're on our way there now. Slinging his rifle over his shoulder, he said, Good, I'm going too. Sarge looked at him. You look like shit. I think you should stay here. Tough shit, Top. I'm going to check on Jamie, Perez replied, as he climbed in the back seat. Once in the back of the truck, Perez slumped over and almost immediately fell asleep. I had to keep an eye on Thad on the tractor to make sure I didn't leave him. I was glancing back at Thad when I heard Sarge ask, What's that? I looked down the road past the bullet holes in my windshield. I still hadn't forgiven Danny for that. And I saw something lying in the road. As we got a little closer, I said, Looks like a person. Sure is. Let's stop and check him out. I stopped short of the body, and we got out. I looked back at Thad and waved him forward. He pulled the tractor around the truck as I walked over to the body. Somebody did a hell of a number on his head, Sarge said. Yeah, I used to joke about striking someone repeatedly about the head and neck. Shit, someone did it to this poor guy, I said. Thad shut the tractor down and pronounced, Damn, he took one hell of an ass whooping. Sarge rolled the body over on its back. The man's face was severely beaten. So bad, the nose sat at an extreme angle. Both eye sockets were probably shattered from the looks of them. His jaw also appeared to be broken. This was personal, Sarge said. That, or whoever did it, just enjoyed it, Thad said. Sarge looked around. The road was covered in blood. Bloody footprints were in a large, circular area around the body. Looks like it was a hell of a fight. He ain't got no shoes, Thad said. The man's bare feet were rather clean compared to the soiled clothes he wore. Someone relieved him of his footwear. It was a stark image to imagine this man being beaten to death over a pair of shoes. It harkened back to the days when inner-city kids would jack one another up over a pair of whatever the sneaker of the day was. But this wasn't done over envy or some sense of fashion. This was more likely done for need. Someone didn't have shoes, or theirs weren't in as good a condition, and they decided to take this guy's. Sarge looked at me. What do you want to do with him? Let's get him out of the road and we'll pick him up on the way back, I guess. Just put him in the bucket. I'll bury him out at the farm, Thad said. We agreed that was the best idea, and Sarge and I hefted the body into the bucket when Thad pulled it over. I just couldn't leave the man there. While I knew nothing about him, it was the proper thing to do. We got back in the truck and headed for Mario's. Looking over at Sarge, I said, Wonder what Mario's going to think with us pulling up at this corpse in the bucket. Sarge laughed. Well, I told him we'd bring him some meat today. Oh, that's just wrong. We stopped at the gate, and I honked the horn and waited. After a couple of minutes, I hit the horn again. Not long after, I saw a side-by-side come out from behind the warehouse. Mario stopped at the gate and opened it. I pulled through and watched in the mirror as Thad came through with the tractor. I couldn't help but smile when I saw him crane his neck to look in the bucket. The feet sticking out the side of the bucket gave no doubt what was in it. I saw him say something to Thad and point at the bucket. Thad shrugged and replied as he rolled through the gate. Once Mario secured the gate, he walked up. What the hell is that? He asked, pointing at the feet sticking out of the bucket. Before I could reply, Sarge leaned forward. Told you I'd bring some meat today. Mario pointed at the tractor. That don't look like a gator to me. Sarge started to laugh and slapped the dash of the truck. I shook my head. Just ignore him. We found him on the road. Couldn't just leave him there. With a quick shake of his head, Mario replied, You ain't leaving him here either. Waving him off, I said, No, I just need to get the generator on the trailer. We'll deal with him later. All right then, follow me. I've got the backhoe over at the generator. Shouldn't be too hard to load it up. We followed him around the warehouse to a small lean-to structure. The generator was out from under the structure, Mario having used the backhoe to pull it out. Once he was off the ATV, I asked him where he wanted me and pulled the truck in as he indicated. Sarge got out and walked around the generator, looking it over. You sure this thing's gonna run? Mario smiled. Hell yeah! Stepping up to it, he flipped one switch, then another. The generator rumbled to life, coughing thick black smoke for an instant before settling into a loud rumble. She's great, Mario shouted over the roar of the machine. Since it was just sitting on the ground, it vibrated furiously. Sarge gave him the kill it signal, and Mario shut it off. Have you checked the output? Sarge asked. Mario nodded. Yeah, it's about 487 volts. That's good enough, I said. Let's get this contraption loaded up then, Sarge barked. Mario explained his plan. He would lift the front of the generator up with a chain connected to the bucket of the backhoe. Then I was to back the trailer under it, and he would set it down and move it to the back of the generator and, using the bucket again, lift it from the bottom and push it up and onto the trailer. Sounded pretty easy. Mario lifted the front of the generator, and Sarge guided me back. Sarge gave me the signal to stop, and I waited as Mario lowered the generator onto the end of the trailer. That's when things went sideways. While the trailer was more than sufficient to handle the load, having all of it on the very end wasn't working out. The front of the trailer rose steadily as he lowered the load. It was putting a lot of pressure on the hitch itself. Sarge yelled at Mario to hold up. I got out to see what was going on. This ain't gonna work. It's putting too much pressure on the hitch, Sarge said. Thad stepped over and looked at the problem. I could come over here with the tractor and put pressure up here on the front. That should be enough for him to get off it. Sarge nodded. All right, let's try it. Thad pulled the tractor up and lowered the bucket down onto the tongue of the trailer. He forced the trailer back down, but had to roll the bucket down a little to get enough pressure. Sarge called to Mario, and he let off the load entirely. It worked, and the trailer sat fairly level. Sarge climbed up and quickly unhooked the chain, and Mario moved the machine to the back of the generator and slid the bucket under it. Picking up the ass end of the machine, he started to push it forward. The generator was mounted on a frame made of 4-inch I-beam. The deck of the trailer was diamond plate, and as Mario started to push, it slid rather easily across the bed. That is, until it hit a small piece of weld we hadn't noticed. When it hit the weld, the whole trailer and generator shuddered hard. The body in Thad's bucket rolled out and ended up with the upper torso on the ground and the legs on the trailer. Mario stopped and asked what was going on. Sarge quickly told him, and Mario jumped off the machine and disappeared into his warehouse. he returned with a large pry bar and handed it to Sarge, who jumped up onto the trailer and jammed the edge of the bar under the I-beam and put some pressure on it. Mario was back in the hoe and gave it a little push. The generator came free and moved forward quickly, throwing Sarge off balance. And trying to catch himself, he tripped over the dead guy's legs and fell off the trailer in a barrage of curses. I ran around the trailer to help him, but he was in no mood for it. He shoved me away. "Get off me, you fucking potato head!" Sarge shouted when I tried to help. I laughed and stepped back. "Be careful, old man. You don't want to break a hip," I shot back, trying not to laugh. He wasn't hurt, so I wasn't worried about him now. He got to his feet and dusted himself off. "I'll break your fucking hip," he shouted. Then, looking at the corpse he had tripped over, he shouted, "Get on the other end of this sack of shit." I helped Sarge get the body back into the bucket, and Thad backed away. "Taken down by a dead man," I said. "I think you're slipping." Sarge pointed at me. "Keep it up, peckerhead." I laughed, but decided it was probably best to leave the grumpy old bastard alone. Best for me, that is. Mario brought out some chains and binders, and we secured the generator to the trailer. It wasn't long before it was properly secured, and we were ready to go. Sarge stepped back and inspected the load. "That went better than I thought it would," he said. Mario huffed. "What? It went exactly like I expected." "Shit, I'm happy. I didn't know what to expect," I said. "Me too. It's on the trailer. That's all I expected," Thad said with a chuckle. Sarge shook Mario's hand. "Thanks for the help, Mario. Hopefully those engineers can get that generator running." "Not a problem. Glad to do my part," Mario replied. I grabbed the bag of gator meat from the truck and brought it over. "Here, Mario. Here's some of the old man's lizard." Mario smiled. "Thanks. This'll be good." "Hope you enjoy it," Sarge said, then looked at Thad. "You and your buddy there ready to go?" Thad smiled. "I am, and he's always ready." "You two are messed up," I said, as I got in the truck and gave Mario a wave. Sarge climbed in beside me. "What's eating your ass?" "Me? Nothing. Let's get this thing delivered and go to town so we can check on Jamie." "Yeah, I need to set up a time to sit down with Sheffield," Sarge replied. "You're going to need to be there as well, but we'll also need Mikey and Ted to be there." Sarge called the armory on the radio to let them know we are on our way to the plant with the generator. One more stop before we could get into town. I was eager to check on Jamie, not to mention we needed to get the farm up and running. Thad and Cecil would oversee the work, but we needed more bodies out there. That meant we needed either volunteers or needed to make some volunteers. Pulling up to the plant, I drove around to the building that held the controls for the plant. The power would have to go in there first, so it was only logical. The engineers weren't there yet, so we got out and looked around. "Where do you think it needs to go?" Sarge asked. "Let me look around," I said. "I hope you know, because I ain't going to be no help on this," Thad said. Going inside, I looked at the banks of breakers and motor control centers, or MCCs. I found the main for what looked to contain most of the pump motors and other associated components of the plant. But there was another one on the other side of the room, and the two weren't directly connected. Trying to rig power between the two would be a real pain in the ass. There had to be a better way. Going outside, I started looking for transformers. The power for the operation of the plant would be tied in with the main grid somewhere. There would also be a switchgear someplace that would allow the plant to swap between grid power and the plant's own output. If I could find that, then we would have one point of connection, making it a lot easier. "What are you looking for?" Sarge asked. "A transformer, a big one," I replied. Sarge walked with me as I went around the corner of the building. And there it was. A giant green transformer sat just outside the back of the building. Considering the power of an EMP and the fact that this thing was tied to the grid, it was probably no good. But that was all right. Our generator would produce the same voltage that this thing did on its secondary side, Power came into the transformer at line voltage of 7200 volts and was stepped down to 480 volts. The generator produced the same 480 volts. Trying the handle on the big green box, I said, "Right here. This is where we need to put the generator. We need to get into this transformer so the engineers can connect to the wire going into the building." "I'll go get the truck," Sarge said, as he disappeared back around the building. There was a padlock on the doors of the transformer. It was the typical power company lock they all seemed to use down here. One of the round ones, with a stamped metal body designed primarily to keep honest people honest. Getting it off would be no great feat. Sarge drove around the corner with a Hummer following him. I was glad to see the engineers because I wanted to get going on the other tasks for the day. So I smiled when Scott and Baker climbed out of the truck. "Well, I hope we weren't interrupting anything important this morning," I said. Baker nodded at Scott. "Just his beauty sleep." Sarge snorted. "And he needs it from the look of that pumpkin on his shoulders." "Hey," Scott said. "Didn't your mother ever teach you if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all?" Sarge smiled. "Where do you think I got my sparkling personality from?" Thad laughed. "You was raised by a rabid dog?" Sarge pointed at Thad and shouted, "I'll have you know, the test for rabies came back negative." He winked and added, "Now, where were we?" I told Baker and Scott to follow me and took them around back to the transformer. Leaning against it, I said, "This is the transformer for the plant's controls. I figured this would be the best place. But if you guys find a better way, by all means, go for it." Scott looked the piece of equipment over and said, "It probably will be, but we'll take a look around just to make sure." "Then we'll unhook the trailer and leave it here," I said. "How are you going to keep someone from stealing it?" Thad asked. "Once we start work, we'll be staying here with a squad to provide security. But for now, we may just drag it back to town at night," Baker said. "Whatever blows your skirt up," Sarge replied, and smiled at Baker. Her only reply was to roll her eyes and shake her head. "All right, then. We'll leave you two with it," I said. Sarge looked around and asked, "Where is that snot-nosed student of yours?" "He's back at the armory finishing up a little job. We didn't need him today," Scott said. "You don't need him unless you need a doorstop," Sarge snorted. "Don't be so hard on him. He's a good kid. Smart, too," Baker said. "Glad he's your problem," Sarge said. "You guys ready to go?" Thad nodded and headed for the tractor while we walked over to the truck and disconnected the trailer. Fortunately, the jack on the tongue of the trailer was stout and had handled the load with no issues. When Thad drove around to join us, Baker saw the legs hanging out of the bucket and nearly shouted, "What the hell is that?" Sarge looked over and flatly replied, "Oh, that's just roadkill." She looked at me for more, but I waved her off. "Don't worry, I won't let him eat it." The look on her face made me laugh. It almost looked as though she thought the old man capable of it. We said goodbye and left. The field Thad and Cecil were working wasn't far from here, and we needed to get him over there. As we headed up 19, Sarge pointed at a couple of guys on the side of the road at a small tote-the-note car lot. They were messing around under the hood of an old station wagon of some kind. They stopped their work and looked up as we passed. "Probably trying to get it to run," Sarge said. "Or scavenging parts," I replied. As if to reaffirm the fact, there were still machines in operation. A motorcycle passed us heading back towards Umatilla. Neither of the two riders wore helmets, and the passenger was trying to manage a large bundle of some sort. It looked like pictures and video I'd seen from places like India and Pakistan, where the motorbike was the primary form of transportation for many, and people would load them with all sorts of junk that would cause a state trooper an immediate erection. At the field, Cecil was already at work. He had a plow connected to his tractor and was out cutting rows. Another plow sat waiting for Thad's tractor. Seeing us pull in, he took off his hat and waved. We pulled over to the plow and waited for him. When he completed the pass he was on, he came over and shut the machine down. Looking at the bucket of Thad's tractor, he cocked his head to the side and asked, "What's his story?" Sarge glanced over and said, "His story is that his story is over. Found him on the road. Someone beat the hell out of him." Cecil walked over and looked in. Letting out a whistle, he said, "They damn sure did." Then he looked at Sarge. "What are you going to do with him?" Sarge shrugged. "Bury his ass somewhere." Cecil looked out over the field. "I'm sure we got a spot out here that'll work." I was struck by the casualness of the conversation. Here was a dead man that we'd found on the road and tossed into the bucket of a tractor. We then drove all over the country with the corpse before ending up here, where Cecil just took it in with no more surprise than if it were a dead cat. Contrasted against how things worked in the before, it was stark. There would have been a road closure with highly skilled people coming out to examine the body and looking for evidence of the crime. The body would have been inspected by the medical examiner, who would determine the cause of death. The body would then be kept in a cooler until the family was notified and arrangements were made. Then someone in a big Cadillac would show up to take the body, covered in a nice velvet blanket, to another building, and there it would be cleaned, dressed, and placed in a box. Elsewhere, someone would lay a slab of granite on a machine and punch in the appropriate words, and the machine would forever etch into the stone the words that would sit for all eternity over the grave of this man. Family and friends would gather as a service was held before the box with the body in it, and then it would finally be lowered on small winches into a hole dug by a machine. The exposed dirt would be covered with cheap, green indoor-outdoor carpet so as not to upset anyone with the reality of the situation. Once the bereaved had departed the burial site, the machine would return to fill the hole. There were so many moving parts, so many people and machines involved. Now one tractor and a couple of men, nothing more, and hardly any notice, and certainly no surprise. Not for those that found him or those that would intern him. Maybe this was the better way. It was certainly closer to the natural way. But then we couldn't really use the natural way of just leaving one where they fell until nature took its course. As much for health reasons as for the fact that no one wanted to see a body in public any more now than before. Though I would imagine that there were millions lying where they fell, or rather their bones. But the killing and dying was by no measure over. "You get anywhere on your help?" I asked. Cecil had an expression that reminded me of my grandfather. His chin would drop to the chest, and folds of skin would show around it, and he'd smirk as if to say, "What do you think?" He did it now, but said nothing. "So we're going to have to find you some bodies, then." Cecil smiled and pointed at the bucket. "Not more of this." Sarge snorted. "Hell, Cecil, if you want live ones, we'll get you live ones." "They would be more productive," Cecil replied. "Shit, Cecil, worms gotta eat too," Sarge shouted, and slapped the hood of the truck. "You need anything before we leave?"
"I just need some able-bodied people that aren't afraid of hard work."
I walked around to the driver's side of the truck and said,
"They can get over their fear."
Cecil grinned.
"Make him too tired to be scared."
As Sarge climbed in beside me, he added,
"Pain is just fear leaving the body. You know, like when that bear scared the crap out of you this morning."
"Yeah, well, me one, bear none." Sarge laughed.
"True. That thing is going to be good eating."
I drove up to the armory and parked. Looking back at Perez, he was still asleep.
"Hey, Perez, we're here."
He sat up groggily and looked bleary-eyed out the window. He started to cough, and I quickly jumped out of the truck. Sarge also exited the truck with haste and looked back.
"Damn it, Perez. You get me sick, and I'll beat your ass."
Perez gave him a dismissive wave.
"Yeah, yeah."
Smiling, he added,
"Wouldn't be hard right now."
Perez extracted himself from the truck and slung his weapon as he trudged towards the clinic. I followed Sarge into the armory to talk to Sheffield. We ran into Livingston first and told him we needed to talk. Livingston pointed us towards the conference room and went off to find the captain. Sarge and I went in, and I dropped into a chair. Sarge, of course, went to the head of the table and took a seat. I was shaking my head. "You just can't stop screwing with him, can you?" Sarge swiveled the chair back and forth. "It's only right that the smartest man in the room be sitting here." I was shaking my head when Sheffield and Livingston came into the room. "What's up, guys?" Sheffield asked, as he took a seat. I was surprised he didn't say anything about the seating arrangement, considering the earlier pissing contest between these two.
"We need to come up with a plan to hit those assholes at the Elks camp. My guys did some recon out there, so we know where everything is. This is going to take a coordinated effort to get rid of these guys," Sarge said.
Sheffield was drumming his fingers on the table.
"How many people do they have?"
"Over 100.
"Holy shit," Livingston said. Then he looked at Sheffield. "I don't like those numbers."
"No doubt it's going to be a hell of a fight, but we've got to do it. They shot up the market in Altoona and bombed the one here. They've hit us a couple of times. We have to take them out," Sarge said.
Sheffield nodded. "We do, but I don't want to lose half my people doing it."
"Nor do I, Captain. I want to bring Mike and Ted up here and go over the lay of the land and come up with a plan. I've got some ideas, but we need to talk about it," Sarge said.
"We definitely need to discuss it," Sheffield said.
Perez made his way to the clinic and walked in. He found Doc and asked where Jamie was. Doc looked at him.
"You still look like shit. Come in here and let me check you out."
"Fuck it, Doc, I'm fine. Believe it or not, I'm better than I was. I just want to check on Jamie."
Doc eyed him for a minute before giving up. He knew Perez wouldn't cooperate.
"All right, but if you start to feel worse, let me know. Come on, she's over here."
Doc led Perez over to a curtain treatment area. Jamie was sitting up in a bed and smiled when she saw Perez.
"Hey, Poppy," she said with a smile on her face. "Hola, chica. How are you feeling?" Perez asked.
Jamie shrugged and lifted the gown she wore to expose a bandage around her abdomen.
"Not bad, considering. These docs here are pretty damn good."
"Good. I hate to have to shoot a bunch of doctors." Jamie smiled.
"You here to take me home?"
"If you're ready, I'm willing,"
Perez replied, and sniffed loudly. Jamie cocked her head to the side.
"You look like hell. You all right?"
Perez chuckled.
"Thanks for noticing. I'm fine. Just been sick."
"So you want me to come home to take care of you, huh?"
Jamie asked with a smile.
Perez shrugged. "Somebody's got to do it."
Doc cleared his throat.
"You should stay here another day or two."
Jamie looked at him.
"Why? They're not doing anything to me. I can sit at home as good as I can sit here."
Perez looked at Doc.
"Yeah, besides, you'll be there."
"Whatever, I'm ready to get the hell out of here anyway."
"Okay, we'll get the guys up here and start working out a plan," Sarge said.
"Let's move on to the farm. We need labor. Have you guys talked to anyone around here?" I asked.
Livingston shook his head.
"No. We are leaving that up to Cecil for the most part."
"Cecil said he wasn't having any luck. We need people out in the fields if we want to grow any food over there," I replied.
"I guess we need to wander over to the park and see if we can get any volunteers," Sarge said.
Looking at Sheffield, I asked,
"You got a bullhorn?"
"Actually, we do," Livingston replied, and left the room.
"You're going to go over and see if you can get those people to work out in the sun, breaking their backs for no pay?" Sheffield asked.
I threw my hands up.
"How do these people expect to eat? We're going to grow this food for everyone, and if you don't contribute, you won't eat."
Sheffield drummed the table with his fingers again and smiled.
"Good luck with that."
Livingston returned with the bullhorn and set it on the table. Sarge picked it up and hit the trigger, speaking into it.
"Does it work?"
The thing was loud and caused everyone to flinch. Sheffield gave him a look and shook his head. I picked up the bullhorn and walked out. Sarge followed me, muttering something about, "I gotta see this." I walked down to the park and up onto the stage of the clamshell. The park was crowded with people, either offering trades or looking for them. Plus, there was the usual assortment of people just hanging out. I guess with no job and nothing to do, a lot of people just didn't know what to do with themselves. Looking at the bullhorn, I said, "Here goes nothing," and I pulled the speaker trigger. "Hey, folks, can I get your attention for a minute?" I gave people a minute to wander closer, or, as was the case with a number of them, at least turn their heads. "We're starting to plant crops outside of town. We've got a big section of land tilled and plowed, and we're ready to start planting. But we need help. This food is for all of us, so all of us need to pitch in. If you would please step up over here, we can get transportation and the like organized." I waited to see what sort of response I would get. I was met with silence as the crowd looked around at their fellows. They did move closer and start to mumble amongst themselves. After a minute, a man stepped up. "So what do we get out of it?" he asked. "You get food. How about not starving to death?" I replied. "Well, seems like this farm would happen with me or without me. If I didn't work, I could just wait for someone else to do it, and then still get my share, couldn't I?" "What share? You wouldn't have a share." Keying the horn again, I said, "If you do not contribute to the farm, you will not be given food. There is no freeloading. You want to eat, you work." The man smiled. "That's what I wanted to hear. I'm in." And with that, several others came to the edge of the stage and said they wanted to work as well. There were still many out there that made no move to offer up their labor, and they began to congregate and talk amongst themselves. After a moment, one of the group stepped forward. "How can you expect us to spend every day working on this farm? We still got to eat. It'll be months before any of those crops are ready. How are we going to feed ourselves today?" Using the bullhorn, I answered the man. "No one needs to be out there every day. 2 or 3 days a week for a few hours will get it done if everyone pitches in. We're not wanting to work anyone like a slave, but the simple fact is we need people in the fields, and if everyone just does a little, then we can get a lot done. We'll provide transportation out and back and water kegs at the farm." The statement was met with more nods, and even more people came up and offered to help. There were still a few holdouts, but there always will be. Hell, if you were giving away sacks of money, someone would complain they were too heavy. Sarge stepped up and crossed his arms. "That went way better than I thought it would." I laughed. "No shit. I didn't expect it to be this easy." Keying the horn again, I said, "Anyone going to the farm needs to be at the armory at 7 tomorrow morning. We'll have trucks ready to take you, and get your names and info then." As we walked off the stage, Sarge started to laugh. I looked at him and asked what he thought was so funny. He slapped his leg. "There's going to be a damn mob at the armory in the morning. Sheffield's going to be pissed." It made me laugh. "Yeah, he probably will be. Let's go tell him so he can't say we didn't warn him." We were mobbed with people when we came off the stage. Questions were hurled at us by a dozen or so people. I put my hands up. "We'll try and answer your questions tomorrow. Just know that this is for all of us." We pushed through the crowd and made our way back to the armory. I saw Livingston as we came through the gate and called him over. "You're going to have a crowd here in the morning, about 7. We need to have trucks ready to take people to the farm. You also need to establish the security detail for them while they're out there. I don't think we need overnight security yet, but when crops start coming up, we'll need it for sure." Livingston looked over at the park. "Wow, I didn't think you'd get any takers." "Hunger will do that to a man," Sarge said. Livingston smiled. "If they're hungry, maybe they'll work then." "They're going to have to," I said. Livingston nodded. "I'll get it put together. We'll be ready." We left and headed to the clinic to check on Jamie. We were intercepted by Shane with the PD. "Hey, Morgan, I got a guy over here that I need to talk to you about." "This is your murderer?" I asked. "Yeah, what are we supposed to do with him?" "Hang him," Sarge shouted. "Probably," I said, "but let's go over and talk to him." As we walked, He told me what he knew of the situation. The guy was drunk and his girlfriend ended up dead. No one is sure exactly how, but she had bruises on her face and marks on her neck like she'd been choked. His family brought him to the station to keep her family from killing him.
Sounds like a good time, Sarge said.
As we got closer to the station, I saw three people standing out front, talking to Sean Meter, Shane's second-in-command of the police.
This is Dave Rose's mom, Sean said. Looking at her, I said,
And Dave is the guy that killed the girl?
It's not his fault. He was drunk. And if that man wasn't selling liquor over there, he wouldn't have been drunk.
She started to protest, but I cut her off. Holding up my hand, I asked, Did he kill her? She paused, but picked right back up.
Yes, he did, but he was drunk,
I cut her off again. And what do you think that has to do with this? She stared at me for a moment before taking off again.
If he wasn't drunk, it wouldn't have happened. He didn't mean to do it. Dave's a good boy, and...
I stopped her once again. I was getting a little pissed with her argument.
Look, drunk or not, he killed someone and has to pay for that.
Unlike before, there is no not guilty by reason of insanity or drunkenness. I said the last part with a heavy dose of sarcasm. Even back in the before, I was so damn tired of people committing horrible-ass crimes and being able to walk away from them relatively unscathed because of a bunch of bleeding hearts. If a dog killed someone, for whatever reason, it would be put down. If a bear or some other predator were to kill a person, it would be hunted to the ends of the earth and put down. But for some reason, our thinking had changed. It was deemed better to keep some people confined for the rest of their lives, or worse yet, to actually be released back into society after committing these horrible crimes. Pointing towards the market, she started again.
But if that man wasn't selling liquor,
I'd had enough.
I stepped towards her and shouted, Your son will accept responsibility for what he's done. And the man selling liquor isn't an issue anymore, now is he?
She immediately cowed away from me, which was fine with me. Looking at Shane, I jerked my head and he followed me towards the door to the PD. As I walked away, a young man that was with the woman, and as yet hadn't said a word, spoke up.
You kill my brother, and you won't be able to close your eyes, ever.
I spun on my heels and headed straight for him. He glared at me as I approached. I could see the hate on his face, and I could also tell that at the moment he meant what he said. As I got closer to him, he stepped forward with his chest pumped up. He was young, maybe 16, and obviously foolish. Once close enough to him, I slammed the butt of my carbine into his nose. It busted like a ripe grape, and a geyser of blood flowed from it as he collapsed. His mother moved towards me, and I drew my pistol as I stepped forward, the kid now on the ground. I pointed the pistol at the woman and shouted, Back off! She froze in her tracks and took a step back. I grabbed the kid by his shirt and lifted him from the ground. Jamming the pistol in his face with as much calm as I could muster, I said, Just like your brother has to take responsibility for his actions, you're going to learn your words have consequences. Looking at him, I asked, You threatening me? You think you're going to get me? His mother was pleading,
Please don't hurt him. He didn't mean anything. He's just a boy.
A boy will kill you as fast as any man, I shouted back.
Looking back at the kid, I said, And I do not plan on looking over my shoulder. Holding his shaking hands in front of his face, the kid pleaded,
Please, mister, I didn't mean anything by it. I'm just upset.
I stared into his eyes as my finger lay on the side of the pistol's trigger. Pointing with the muzzle, I said, I'm going to believe you for now. You're young and dumber than a sack of dog shit. But you better believe if I ever catch you looking sideways at me, I'll kill your ass. Understand me? The kid nodded, and I released my hold on his shirt. He dropped back to the pavement as I stepped off him. His mother rushed to his side and knelt down, lifting his head into her lap. Holstering my pistol, I looked at the two others there with them. They wouldn't make eye contact, so I headed back for the PD. Shane looked at me,
Raising his eyebrows, he said, "Feel better?"
"I don't deal well with threats," I replied, as I passed him. He looked back at the boy and said, "Could have fooled me," and he followed me inside. I found Sarge talking to Sean. He looked up.
"Well, what's it going to be?"
"He's killed someone. There's only one solution for him. But we'll use him for a bit first. I'm going to have him put to work for a while." Looking at Sean, I added, "We need to come up with some sort of jury system or something. We need a judge." Sarge smiled.
"I was wondering when you'd get around to that."
"It would be best, but I don't know who we'd use," Sean replied. "If we ever want to get this community put back together, we have to." "You've got to know someone around here," I said. Sean let out a long breath and looked at the floor. Looking up, he said, "I'll have to think about it for a bit. Let me know when you come up with some names, and we'll talk to them. In the meantime, we need some chain. From now on, people caught for petty shit will be put to work in the farm. Have the two prisoners chained and at the armory by 7 for transport to the farm." Sarge's bushy eyebrows went up.
"Chain gang?"
I nodded.
"That's a good idea."
"We're going to use Sheffield's people out at the farm, just like any other form of detention. Escape attempts will be dealt with in one manner."
"Gunline," Sarge grunted.
"That's a good idea. Make it clear where the line is and what the consequences are," Sean added. "Just like at Angola in Louisiana, that old prison didn't have a fence, just a line painted on the ground. No warning shots." "I'll find some chain and locks and get it ready," Sean said. "I'm going over to the clinic to check on Jamie. We'll see you guys in the morning," I said.
"I'm glad to see you're starting to think about things like a judge and jury," Sarge said, as he glanced over at me.
"It needs to be done," I replied, and looked at him.
"Bad as it sounds, though, the real reason is I don't want to be responsible for everything. I don't want to be the one making those decisions all the time."
Sarge shook his head.
"Don't blame you a bit, Morgan. I sure as hell wouldn't want to be making those calls either."
Sarge and I went to the clinic to see what Jamie's status was. She didn't look so good the last time I saw her, and I was worried. But when Sarge and I got to the clinic, we were surprised to see her dressed and ready to go. Ian was with her, along with Doc.
"You look fit as a fiddle," Sarge said with a smile.
"I don't feel like a fiddle," she replied with half a smile. I looked at Doc.
"Well, Doc, what's the word?"
He didn't look too happy.
"I think she should stay here another day or two, but she wants to go home, and there is no real reason for her to stay here. She can heal just as well at home."
"Damn right I can," Jamie added.
"All right, then, let's get loaded up and on the road."
Chapter 7 Danny and Dalton worked in the bear for a couple of hours. Danny was being meticulous with the hide. He'd always wanted a bear hide, and this was probably the only chance he'd have with one. The two men worked carefully but quickly to remove the hide. Dalton worked the head, completely skinning it out. Holding up one of the paws, Danny asked, "What about these?" Dalton held the foot up and looked at it.
"If you want, I'll do them. I've never done it before, but I watched a guy out at the rabbit stick gathering in Idaho once."
"Well, that's 100% more than I have, so go at it."
"Let's get this thing skinned and quartered, and I'll tend to those later. When we open this thing up, I want to get the gallbladder out intact."
Unsure why, Danny asked,
"What for? What are you going to do with that?"
Dalton looked at him curiously.
"Medicine."
"Medicine?" Danny asked. In a stoic voice of a TV Indian, Dalton replied,
"Big medicine."
Danny laughed.
"Whatever you say, Tonto."
They continued working on the carcass. When it was nearly skinned out, Dalton turned his attention to the feet. He used a small Bark River neck knife and made a slit along the edge of the pad on the bottom of the foot. He then meticulously skinned each digit. It took some time to do all 4 feet, but when he was done, the feet were intact.
It would only take a couple of stitches to reconnect the pad where he made the cut, and the bearskin rug would have all 4 feet. Danny held up one of the feet and looked at it.
That's really cool.
I didn't think you'd be able to get it done that quick.
Seemed to me to take forever, Dalton said, as he wiped his brow.
Danny rolled the hide up and set it aside. Looking at Dalton, Danny said,
You ready to open this thing up?
Dalton nodded.
Yeah, I'll do the cutting so I can get that gallbladder out.
Dalton made a slit in the belly of the animal and inserted his finger into the animal's abdomen and laid the tip of the blade against it. Using his finger as a guide, he ran the tip of the blade down the animal's middle, exposing the internal organs. Once it was open, he reached in and ran his hand along the liver and found the gallbladder. Using the small knife, he pinched the top of the gallbladder and cut it free. Taking it out, he held it up to show Danny.
Here it is.
Danny wrinkled his nose.
Doesn't look like medicine to me.
Dalton looked at it.
Maybe not, but in Asian medicine, this is used a lot. Sadly, thousands of bears were kept in captivity in China, where they were milked for this. Only reason I'm taking it out is to respect the animal by using everything we can from it. I would never buy this.
Cocking his head to the side, Danny asked,
How do you milk a bear's gallbladder?
Dalton shook his head.
It's sad. They surgically insert a tube so they can do it. The bears are kept in a cage that keeps them from moving at all for up to 20 years. It's really pathetic.
Danny spit in the dirt.
Damn Chinese.
With Dalton's prized gallbladder now out of the bear, they set to work quartering the rest of the animal up. The tenderloin was cut out and set aside as the prime cut it was. Then, all that remained was breaking the rest of the animal down. That work didn't take long, and soon the meat was ready to be taken into the house. It took a few extra minutes to remove as much fat from the carcass as possible. Holding a piece up, Dalton said,
This is like gold. It's the hardest thing to come by in nature.
Yeah, it's hard to produce this, Danny replied.
Nodding, Dalton said,
Takes lots of calories, and this bear did the work for us.
Dalton grabbed the 2 hind quarters to carry inside. Danny asked if he could use Dalton's neck knife. He wanted to remove the meat from between the ribs.
I don't want to waste any of it.
Right on, go ahead. I'll take these in and I'll be back.
Going inside, Miss Kay and Bobby were ready. They had Danny's meat tubs and large cutting boards sitting on the island. Coming through the door, Dalton shouted,
Did someone order some meat?
Clasping her hands in front of her face, Kay said,
Oh, look at all that.
Bobby was standing behind the island, knife in hand. She slapped the cutting board.
Bring that over here.
Dalton dropped the 2 quarters onto the cutting board.
Here you go, ladies. More to come.
Keep it coming, Kay said, as she grabbed one of the legs, rolled it over, and examined it. After giving it a once-over, she went to work with her knife. Dalton brought the other 2 quarters in and returned to help Danny with what was left. Danny picked through the gut pile and removed the kidneys. He cut them in half and carried them over to the chicken feeder bucket and dropped them in. It wouldn't take long for the flies to find them and lay eggs. Then the chickens would enjoy the extra protein provided by the developing larvae. All that remained now was the gut pile. They'd wait for Thad to get back with the tractor to haul it over to the pig pen. Thad and Cecil worked on the field for several hours. With 2 tractors, they were able to get the first section rowed out and ready to plant. The 2 men stopped their tractors under the oaks and inspected their work.
I think we're ready, Cecil said.
Thad nodded.
Yeah. They get some folks out here, and we'll be able to get this planted in no time. I'm going to head back to town. I've got a couple of things I want to do before we kick this off.
Thad nodded.
Me too. I'll head home today as well. Morgan killed a bear, and I want to go see it.
Cecil smiled.
Can't believe there's still a bear around.
Thad laughed.
There's one less now.
Cecil laughed at the comment, and as he climbed up onto his tractor,
I'll see you tomorrow.
Thad waved as he mounted his machine.
In the morning, Cecil.
The two men parted ways at Highway 19, with Cecil headed south and Thad north. It wouldn't take long to get back home. He got there just in time to find the gut pile of the bear, all that was left. Danny told him it needed taken care of, and Thad said he'd take it to the pigs and scooped it up. Thad drove the tractor over to his place. Getting the tractor through the gate, he drove out towards where the gator was dropped and dumped the bucket. The gator was gone. Hardly anything remained. Thad shut the tractor down and climbed off. He was looking for the pigs. He took a couple of steps towards the back of the field when a single gunshot rang out. It came from the direction where he was looking. Thad waited a minute to see if there would be more. Then he saw the pigs come running out of the woods, headed for the barn. When there wasn't another shot, he started to walk towards the sound to find its source. As he walked, he pulled the shotgun from the scabbard on his back. Gripping the shotgun, he moved to the wood line and listened.